What an amazing episode of Daniel Sutcliffe, the holistic and biological dentist. Daniel actually removed my amalgams back in the summer. I had four of them removed in less than an hour, and it was nothing short of miraculous. I wish that I had done it years ago, but my fear of seeing a dentist had made me put it off for a long time. I really, really needn't have feared, because you're in such safe hands with Daniel. He is an incredible soul and very knowledgeable. Listen in where we discuss amalgams, we discuss oral health, what you need to do, why your oral microbiome is actually so important, advice on cleaning, what we should be using, thoughts on fluoride and the alternatives. We talk about how our airways can affect health and so much more. So please listen in. And if you want to get in touch with Daniel, then his links are in the show notes below. Thank you, Daniel, so much for coming on. I'm really excited to have you on. And you know what? One of the Instagram posts I did after I saw you to have my fillings removed had like my biggest ever views. I think it's a hot topic. People are really interested in oral health and
fillings.
Yeah, no, honestly, people are like, what did you do? Who did you go see? Like, so
it's great. It's creating so much interest, because that's what we need. It needs to create more interest.
Definitely. Well, people are very interested, so I'm really, really grateful for you coming on. Can I get you to briefly introduce yourself to the listeners, please?
Yeah, my name is Daniel Sutcliffe. I'm a dentist in central London, and one of the main things my special interest is holistic dentistry, but mainly amalgam removal.
So how did you get into holistic dentistry? What is the difference for anyone that doesn't have it?
Pretty early on, actually. When I was at the dental school, we're doing all different types of dentistry and stuff. And when we replace an amalgam, they tell you about you'd read on, people that there was concerns. And the way I do my dentistry is, if there's any concern, I try not to use it. It's the same with, if I'm doing a composite, I use BPA-free composites. If I'm with amalgam, I placed them for the first year, and I hated it, because I was part of like the NHS, where I had to do in that first training year. And one of the things I wanted to do straight away was not place it. It just didn't seem right. And I just thought, well, there's other materials which are more biocompatible. Why not use more biocompatible materials? And even though we've got there's loads of concerns and evidence, and there's loads on the internet, but if we had to look at the highest scientific standard trial, a double blind controlled trial, I think it'd be virtually impossible to design a trial. So because I had concerns of it, I just thought, well, I'm not going to use it. And I think that then set me onto a more of a holistic path, not just looking at the patient, but getting to know the patient. I think, like when I treated you, you spend time getting to know the patient first, not just the dentistry and the medical conditions, but you as a person, just so I can tailor it best to you. And I felt as though in medicine and dentistry and all sorts of aspects of medicine, you do your own thing. And you don't always link with others. I felt there's a bit of a discord between all of the different specialities within medicine and also dentistry to medicine. I thought, we're not as linked as maybe we should be. So yeah, that was how my path started.
And how many people do you treat a week to get people with the amalgams removed? Are you busy?
I tend to, this is going to sound really sad, but I feel as if I'm dead lucky, because I love coming to work. There's never been a day in 20 years where I've ever woke up and thought, I've got to go to work. So I don't pack patients out. A lot of dentists especially a lot of dentists that have worked for me in the past, a lot of patients all booked in. I don't do that. I have big gaps for people, make sure I've got loads of time. And I don't, because a lot of the people coming to me are holistic, and I'm quite holistic, we're often on the same sort of energy levels, if that makes any sense. We're similar. So it feels like I'm treating friends all day, so I don't overbook patients, to be honest.
That's lovely to hear. So, I've got so many questions, actually, I want to ask, but let's kick off with the amalgams, because people are so interested in that. And I just want to say, for anyone listening that's thinking, oh, maybe I want to get them removed, but I'm scared. First of all, don't be scared, because it was absolutely incredible. do you remember how nervous I was?
Yeah.
And like, I Well, my only regret is actually how long
Not
I
doing it
lived.
sooner.
Yeah, like it didn't hurt at all. And I have had friends that have gone to see other dentists that have not had the same experience. They actually almost can't believe, like, I was in and out in like less than an hour and had all of them removed, in like four I had removed in less than an hour. They're like, what? So I really want to talk about your process, but maybe before we do, could you talk through your view on, maybe what the dangers are of amalgams and what your view is of them, or maybe there aren't dangers, it's better to be on the safe side. What's your view?
When they remove them, so there's a group of dentists we've got together called the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, and it's brilliant. It's a group of like-minded dentists like myself that we're from all over the world. In fact, we're meeting next April in America, and we set up a load of procedures to take out amalgam in a certain way. It's called a SMART technique, and a lot of dentists will probably think we're over the top, and maybe I am over the top. But it's things like using rubber dams, you have your own air supply, you have something in the room which sort of pulls air away from your teeth as we're drilling them. There's loads of different extra precautions we use, and maybe I'm over the top, but my thinking is if I treat it as though it could cause troubles, even though we've got no evidence that it does, not definite scientific evidence at the moment, then I want to remove it with every physical precaution I can. And I think that's my thing on amalgam. If I'm going to, I don't place them, and I haven't done for 20 years. There's a lot of metals don't place as well. But if I'm going to remove an amalgam filling, I'll do it with the absolute most precaution possible. Not to say we're scaremongering, saying we're, they're dangerous. I don't know. No, I think it's a bit like a room we've never fully switched the light on. We've got concerns and there's grumbles, but we just don't know for sure. We've never had a trial of higher sound scientific evidence to be able to say they definitely cause this, that, or the other. But I equally think that'd be very difficult to design a trial like that anyway. So I just am over the top and I treat them as though they could be dangerous and I remove them in this smart procedure. And I'm not the only dentist. There's quite a lot of dentists, especially worldwide, where I'll sort of go in along my lines as well. And then we worry about what we replace it with. So if I'm going to put a composite in, I don't like BPA. It's a type of plastic. I don't like certain types of monomers. So everything I use in dentistry, I have a very sort of long think of, how biocompatible is this? Really thinking of every single material we use and could it affect this patient? Could it affect that patient? So it's looking at it from maybe a bit of a different perspective.
No, it's a great perspective to look at. So if someone's thinking, right, I want to come in, want to book in, like what would be the typical procedure? Because you offered me certain things and I didn't take you up on all of what we could do. So yeah, can you talk through like what the average person, if they came, what it would look like in an appointment?
So from like when the patient's booking right from the start and how it's done, or
Or
just
yeah,
different
if they're
options.
coming in, yeah, if they're coming in, they want to get their fillings removed. What would it look like from when they come in to visit you? Yeah, the actual process.
So it's a lot of time beforehand, getting to know the patient, then going through all the options. In the old days, I used to do quite a lot of inlays rather than composites, whereas now a lot of the composites have become stronger and stronger, and the inlays are much more expensive, whereas the composites are a little bit cheaper. And it's not inferior, but they're also a lot stronger. So I'm starting to do a lot more composites as opposed to inlays now. So that's a nice positive change. It's spending time with people beforehand. It's when we do the procedures, you're covered, you've got an air supply on, we've got a dam cover in your mouth, you've got an air system working in the back. We have special types of burrs, which is called chunking, so it chunks them out quickly. I think yourself and a lot of patients are quite, how come it came out so quick? I think because I've been doing it for 20 years, you're almost sort of on an autopilot, but you get used to working out where the weak points in the amalgam are, because I've done so many over the time. You can sort of pick a certain part of the fin and think, okay, if I drill in that direction, it'll shatter out. And it often does. None of this drilling for 20, 30 minutes and with a diamond burn, it's slopping, splatting everywhere. That's all gone. It's under a dam. It's with a certain type of burn. It's usually, I think, like when you had it done, they're out quickly. It's more time building them up, the confidence back up.
Yeah, no, really, yeah, I couldn't believe it. It was literally done in, I think, I mean, I was in and out in an hour, wasn't I? It was unbelievable. So, and yeah, and I know other friends that have seen other dentists to have removals. They've had maybe four fillings and have had to go back more than one occasion. and they've been like gagging from the dam. And I'm like, there was just nothing like that. It was so.
I think because I do it all day and I have done for ages. And I used to lecture on amalgam removal to other dentists. And it's been, I think about everything. And I think one of the beauty of, I'm only working 3 days a week at the moment, but I have done 5++ in the past. But one of the beauties of not overbooking myself is I can really think about every procedure what I'm doing. And because I'm doing a lot of amalgam removals during the day, I think about it all the time, about how I can improve things. How can it be slicker? How can the patient be there and it be done as effortlessly as possible? Because that's what everybody wants. They want to come in dentistry, should be pain-free, stress-free. It's our job, and I think it's our job to create that environment, me, the nurse, my wife books patients in. It's creating that environment of a relaxed before they even come in the chair. So Liv will be, you're booking with Liv and the wife, and she'll go, oh, well, you'll see you down there. It's, I want it to be friendly from the outset. You come in, the practice has got a lovely feel about it, hasn't it? And yeah. There's always a lot of laughter, and we all get on really well. I think patients feel that straight away. And it's when you're working on patients who are nervous, it's very difficult to get treatment done easily. And that's when people feel as though they're going to gag and it all feels uncomfortable. When somebody's completely relaxed and I'm almost detracting what I'm doing, I don't know if you felt that, I might talk about something you've mentioned and I'll almost try and distract people. So it just seamlessly goes and people will go, when did that happen? Oh, I've already done that. And it's sort of a way of just sort of making it as nice and as comfortable and as easy and as stress-free as possible. So it just, you come in and then it's nice and then you're like, oh, I finished.
No, that was what it was like. And people that aren't lucky enough to be near to you, able to visit, what should they look for then when they are seeking to get their fillings removed? You know,
I mean, anybody registered with the IOMT, but we do get people from all over the world because I do it in one session. We get people from all over the country. We book in, if they can give me x-rays before, I can look and say, okay, we're likely to need one session or two sessions. And people often, I treat a lot from the Middle East, I treat some from America. Yeah, people come in. So we try and, but if you're wanting to see a dentist locally, if you can find somebody on the IOMT and somebody's certified member on the IOMT, that's often the best way to go. Because then they're going to do things in a certain techniques and ways of doing things.
And do you know what, actually, although that might seem, I can actually see why people would fly, because your prices are actually really reasonable. I was really surprised. Like, and
the other dentist in Harley Street is surprised. There was, how come you're doing it so cheap? I know my prices are a lot less, and a lot of patients will sort of say, well, actually, the flight from, we had two from Glasgow the week before last, and it's like, oh, well, by the time I got a flight down, it was lovely to spend the day in London. I was a bit numb for a while, but it was, you know, and then I flew back. It was cheaper than a dentist, wasn't that far from them. But it's, you know, I'm happy to treat however people, and we work with people. So if somebody is traveling the long way, we'll work and say, okay, when does your flight arrive? Okay, we'll give you a bit of an hour buffer before. We'll give you a bit more time during the procedure. If need be, we can see you. They've got another, so we try and fit completely That's around right. them if we can.
And what do you do for, do you recommend anything after you've had the work done? Because again, I know like some people are recommended injections and this and all sorts of like supplements.
I'm a little sort of skeptical on it. I mean, things like Corella, activated charcoal, fine. A very high dose of vitamin C, I think you've got to be careful. It can affect our anaesthetics. Some of these processes where people go to after, they can be incredibly expensive and there's not a lot of evidence on them. And there's all sorts of different types of collations. And I've worked with loads of different people in the past that I've referred to after amalgam removals, but it can be incredibly expensive. And patients go, I just don't, you know, it's something I'm not 100% sure. And I do get a lot of patients coming through the front door and they've been given these huge treatment plans to have amalgams out. They're vastly expensive with months of all different types of treatment after, and I'm not sure if we can activate a charcoal like the IOMT say and things like that, fine, but I think we've got to be very, very careful because we've got to look at the body as a whole. We've got to look at, you know, not every patient's the same, and a lot of these patients have the exact same therapies they do after, but everybody's different. We've got to look at everybody as an individual and everyone's medical conditions are different. So maybe just a bit skeptical, keep up Corella or activated charcoal or something like that.
No, excellent advice. And actually, I'm just going to say here before I get flooded with messages as to people ask me, what did I do? So what I did was I took like an activated charcoal after, But I use homeopathy. So I took x-ray to detox the x-ray. You can take a one-off dose of a 30 or 200. And then I actually just had my regular kit. So I took phosphorus to detox from the anesthetic.
Yeah.
I took arnica and Helios's post-surgery mix to help, and mercury to help detox mercury. So I just used homeopathy and felt amazing, actually.
Yeah. I used to do more. I used to inject hermetoxicology. I used to do all different types of things. But I think from our dental board's point of view is we've got to be dentists first. So there's that line. It's you do the dentistry. And I'm not necessarily against that, because there was quite a lot of different things that I wasn't sure about anyway. So I tend to stick to the dentistry. And then if anybody wants to sort of a naturopath or somebody near where I am, I can say, well, you can go and see such and such. So I tend to do it that way.
No, that makes sense. Okay, just one quick question sort of related while we're on the topic of metals, where I go more general. Someone actually messaged me on Instagram saying they've got metal retainers and they've had them fixed in their mouth for 14 years. Like, do you think that's okay?
Yeah, I'm not wholly against it, to be honest. Patients often come in and ask me that. It's if you've moved teeth and you've got your teeth to the position you want them to be, and patients are delighted with the result and, oh, the smile's lovely, you've got to be very careful because the teeth can move back. Teeth are always moving. People think once you've moved teeth to a one position, they'll stay there. They won't. You need a retention. In the past, I used to make clear retainers as well as a wire going behind the teeth as well. We don't live in them. In the most ideal world, I prefer not to put any metals inside the mouth, but we don't live in that ideal world. And without those, I mean, you can get some ceramics, but without those, you don't want your teeth moving back, and they can move. So a lot of dentistry is sort of working out the best for each individual patient. We haven't got the ideal world. People often ask me about root canals, and, you know, we can't just take a tooth out and inject and another tooth grows. So you've just got to do the best in whatever situation we've got today.
And yeah, teeth move. I can attest to that because I had, oh God, what are they called? train tracks.
Yes.
When I was younger, to close my gap in my tooth. And like, I stopped wearing my retainers at night and it just came back. You know, I don't mind because actually I quite like it. My teeth are straight, but they definitely, moved. Okay, so let's go on to just generally, we were talking a little bit about this before we hit record, about the link between oral health and other parts of the body, the gut, brain, the heart. Can you tell the listeners, a bit more about why your mouth is so important and good?
Yeah, this is my big thing, really. I mean, one of the things that I'm really sort of wanting to look at is how what we do as dentistry can affect the rest of the body. For years, we've realised that people with periodontal disease, which is a disease of the gums when you go past a gingivitis, tend to have more likely to need have a heart attack or have other problems with diabetes. And for years, we thought it was like shared risk factors. But then as the time's gone on, we've realized it's not. So as the bone levels recede, we have different types of bacteria in the mouth. And there's one particular vicious called P. gingivalis. And then once the bacteria in the bone level, where the bone levels go to a certain degree to a point, then the bacteria can just travel around the body. If you've got this periodontal problem, you're 2 to 3 times more likely to have a heart attack. Diabetes is a two-way street. Poorly controlled diabetes, you'll have periodontal problems. Periodontal problems link back to diabetes. Low birth weight in pregnancy, more likely to get pneumonia from your lungs. There's all sorts of, we're looking, this is quite new, but we're looking at a dementia as well. So we're looking at the fact that P. gingivalis seems to go into the bloodstream, goes to the blood-brain barrier, and it releases a chemical across the blood-brain barrier. And we're worried what that could start affecting dementia. Things like, there's a trial that was done with rheumatoid arthritis, and it was with the rheumatoid arthritis patients who had periodontal disease. When they were treated for the periodontal disease, they started to feel less pain with the rheumatoid arthritis. So we've really got to look at, I think I'd love, dentistry is already looking at this, but I think when we're treating our patients, especially if they've got periodontal disease, like I had a guy the other day who got problems with his heart and got periodontal disease. So I was very strongly telling him the link, saying, well, the bacteria in your mouth can track. And, we've got to control your mouth because you can't be healthy, have a healthy body with an unhealthy mouth. It's all connected. Everybody seems to think, oh, dentistry is different. It's not. It's absolutely everything's connected. And then we've also got to look at the oral microbiome as well. So But there's just as many bacterial cells, if not more, in your own body than there is your own cells. So you've got to think of us almost like a host. So whatever we're feeding us, we're feeding the bacteria. And the way the bacteria interplay with us affects the whole body. We're starting to see if people have got irritable bowel syndrome, you're finding some of the bacteria found in the mouth, in the gut. So we used to think they're separate systems, and they're not really. Thankfully, the gut bacteria is getting a lot of research, and it's certainly getting a lot of attention, which is fabulous. But I think we need to give some attention to the oral microbiome as well, because there's 700 different types of bacteria in the mouth, and they interplay massively with the rest of the body. So it's making sure we look at the oral microbiome there as well. And we've always got to look at how we nourish that oral microbiome. I think in the past we've done very much disinfection. We do need to disinfect some of these particularly vicious bacteria, but we also need to start looking at research towards to nourishing the bacteria, giving the saliva what it needs, whether it be hydroxyapatite, like we're starting to do with toothpaste, to be able to nourish the teeth as well. So we need to start to look at the fact that there's bacteria in the mouth that could be actually not necessarily completely bad for us, but it's a play with it. You need certain types of bacteria in the mouth, like you do in the gut, good and bad, and the interplay between good and bad. So I think I would hope our future would go much towards that. We're starting to get oral microbiome kits where we can test people's bacteria. And I think it would be nice to go along that route. And another really interesting thing is an Italian group of scientists have been looking at skulls 19,000 years old. And they've still got some of the calculus on the teeth. So you can test the genetics. And we've been able to work out how the oral microbiome was then, all the way through skulls tested through history back to now. So we need to work out where we are now, where we were then. And it's very different, but it's probably different for loads of reasons. But it's just to make sure we can really test what's going on in our mouth, the bacteria in our mouth. It's so important for us to look forward.
How do you, I haven't heard yet of testing.
It seems quite, I know it's not many people seem to know about it. It's something that I've been quite interested in for a while now, and I'm sort of doing more and more research and sort of talking to people like yourself about it much more. And I'm noticing patients are starting to say, what do you know about the oral microbiome, Dan? Do you know anything? And I'm like, well, bits. And it is, I think it's vital for us, because that's another way that the mouth can affect the rest of the body.
How do you do the tests, or how do you?
No, but they are starting to come out. Some of them are a bit, I don't think they're fully accurate at the moment, but that's my next thing, is to sort of make sure we can get these tests more accurate and start using them more. And it's the same with toothpaste. So a lot of the toothpaste now is starting to look at not just disinfecting completely, we're looking at how we can nourish as well. Making sure we've got like things like hydroxyapatite in the saliva, which is natural. It's natural to the enamel. It's natural to your saliva. It's natural to your bones. It's a natural thing. It's part of your body. So it's making sure we can give the saliva enough nutrients that we need to nourish the teeth as well. So it's a nourishing thing as well as a disinfection, which is kind of difficult. So there's a lot of complexities, but I'm hoping that's the way it'll go.
Okay, so now I've got loads of questions. How do we best look after our teeth? I'm going to take notes for like what, like exactly, like how should we be doing it? Because I'm thinking now, like my whole family probably aren't doing it right, or not right, you know, optimally. How do we best look after our
teeth? So if we're looking at sort of from some of the more vicious bacteria, I mean, one of the things I do oral health education in schools, and because I only work 3 days a week, I tend to have 2 days a week doing things like this or doing oral health education in schools, and I really like it. And it's the 2 minutes in the morning, the 2 minutes in the evening, the outsides, the tops and the insides of the teeth. But for whatever reason, in this country, we don't seem to do the interproximal cleaning as much. And that's your flossing, your water flossers, TP brushes. A lot of the bacteria are stuck between the teeth, and yet we clean all the other surfaces, but we don't, a lot of the population doesn't floss properly or floss at all. And there's a lot of bacteria between. I think we certainly need to focus on that, because we need to keep it clean. And it's things that are sticky from your diet getting stuck between your teeth as well. So interproximal cleaning is absolutely vital. And I think we certainly need to push that so much more.
I don't know how people can't floss. Like, I've actually just thought, like, I mean, without being gross, I get the biodegradable sticks, you know, yeah, they're easier. Yeah. And I'm like, no, and if I do it after I brush my teeth, you know, you still see trapped gunk. And I'm like, how can people not floss? Because I didn't, like, years ago. And I've just bought one of the water. I haven't used
it yet.
But I got it. There was on Amazon Prime, actually. And I thought, oh, I'm going to get one. And actually, it's charging, but I haven't used it yet. So would you say they're good?
Yeah, brilliant. I think there's any way you can clean in between the in between the teeth, and everybody prefers there's different things. Some people go, Dan, I prefer TPs, I prefer water, flosses, whatever you want is better. But I do with what you just said, when I try to get patients using interproximal products, it's amazing. I go, oh, I can't believe I never used it in the past. Oh, I'm never going back. Now I can't leave the house without, it's almost like they can't leave the house without flossing once they've started. It's the same with tongue scraping as well, actually.
When, oh yeah, I've got a tongue scraper and if I just had a toothbrush, I wouldn't feel like I'd clean my teeth if that's all I use. Yeah, so tell us about tongue scraping.
Well, it's the same with tongue scraping. So a lot of patients go, I don't know. I said, well, try this. You know, you can try metal ones or plastic ones, which are easier to take away. And then patients will do it and go, oh, there's something, you know, it's almost like a bit yellowy coming from the tongues, all sorts of different things. So it's like, just keep going until it goes clear. And after a week or two weeks, you go, oh, damn, and my mouth feels completely different. And it is very important. It is something we need to do. And again, I think it's something that when patients are honest with me a lot, don't.
Yeah, you'll never go back. Once I've got a metal one. And I tell you what, my kids are like, oh, that's gross. Like they see it hanging off the side. Like, it's not. It's actually should kids be doing.
But then it goes the other way, because then if you're not doing your tongue scraping, it's like patients are like, oh, I went away for the weekend and I forgot the tongue scraping. It's like, I felt as though I couldn't go out for a meal. You know, it's like, you know, you then once you get your oral hygiene and you're really cleaning things really well, to a certain level, it's amazing how happy patients feel. And then they can't go back because it does feel much nicer.
No, definitely. Okay, so what about toothpaste? Like there is fluoride or non-fluoride, and
it's one of those things. If we were to, so we've got hydroxyapatite type, which is really exciting as well.
Okay, so tell us more about that, because I haven't heard.
In the past you've got the fluoride. So the one thing about fluoride is it's if the fluoride do go into the tooth enamel and they make the tooth enamel stronger, so there's no doubt you're much less likely to have decay if you're using fluoride toothpaste. You don't need to, you don't necessarily have to, most of my patients don't, but you've got to be at that position where you're not at risk of decay. If your decay rate is not even remotely under control, then I say to patients, that doesn't really happen that much with me anymore. But if it is, then I have to say, look, you know, you're not controlling this decay. Every time I see you, there's another hole. That's when we've got to look at, in the old days, and still now, it's fluoride, but there's another contender, the hydroxyapatite, which also nourishes the tooth and makes the tooth, the enamel, stronger as well. So they're starting to see trials, is it as effective as fluoride? And they're starting to come through, and then it is a way, so if a patient does need a bit more, that's where I'm starting to push them more towards the hydroxyapatite route as well. And then that's in your saliva, it's nourishing the enamel, and it's making sure we can make the enamel stronger. They've got to get the decay rate under control. It's heartbreaking to have, you know, an eight-year-old having to refer to a hospital to have five teeth out. It's heart-wrenching. So it's making sure that whoever the patient is, whatever the age is, and whatever the struggle they've got, you know, it might be with somebody older or somebody for whatever reason isn't creating very much saliva, so therefore they haven't got the protection of the saliva to help them and the decay rate's high because of that. Or there's different reasons why different patients can struggle with decay rates. And it's just making sure you, again, a bit like we said before, looking at that patient as a whole. There's a patient not long ago I used to treat in Manchester, a blessing, who was living on his own, but he was struggling to look after himself with his toothbrush. So that's where you're learning about that patient, saying, oh, how are you? Oh, fine. Oh, well, you know, my wife died 5 years ago and I'm starting to struggle to keep things, my hand shake a bit. And it's learning about that patient and taking that time to learn the patient, to learn that patient's situation, to be able to help them best. And that's where the holistic thing comes from. A lot of people say, God, you know a lot about your patients. And it's like, well, the more I know, the more I can help. And it's not just your teeth and your medical conditions. It's the fact that lovely guy, an absolute gentleman, was living on his own, but was struggling. He just was dead honest saying, I'm actually really struggling to look after myself. It was starts of sort of Parkinson's type things. And, you know, it's learning that. And that's where I might just sort of say, well, try the hydroxyapatite. Fluoride without effect, I know we've got concerns, but will make teeth stronger. But then we have this other contender, hydroxyapatite, which we can use as well, which is completely biocompatible because it's in your body anyway.
So how do you get hold of it? Like, is it in a toothpaste?
Some of the new toothpaste are coming out. We've got some mouthrinses coming out. So there seems to be a lot more hydroxyapatite products coming out, which is great. And I think that would be, we talk about the future of dentistry, and I think that would be another thing for the future. If we can start going towards hydroxyapatite. Hydroxyapatite isn't going to change the pH of the mouth. It's not going to change, it's not going to damage your oral microbiome. In the old days, it was this mouth rinse gets rid of 99.99% of the bacteria in your mouth. We don't necessarily want that. We want to keep things clean, but it's hydroxyapatite is natural. It's completely natural. So fluoride has its place, and it definitely has its place. And I can understand why dentists will say, no, we have to push fluoride, because it is heart-wrenching referring an 8-year-old to have loads of teeth out under GA. But if we can teach patients to look after the mouth, to look at the diet, then we can, and to maybe use some hydroxyapatite as well, we can prevent things otherwise.
So what are your, do you have sort of recommended brands? There are so many non-fluoride toothpaste out there and products.
I did High Helps with B Vital. They do propolis toothpaste gels and liquids. So I helped them, and that was brilliant for people who had ulcers, sensitivity, gum issues. It was brilliant for a lot of things, and a lot of patients like that as well. So there's not just your hydroxyapatite, there's not just those types of things. This is a propolis, bees make it for the beehive. Mm. And I did some research with them about 10-15 years ago, and I was quite impressed with it, and I still recommend it to my patients, especially ones that have got ulcers.
Okay, and excellent. And what about mouthwash? Do you recommend mouthwash, and is there a best time?
If we do, it's more likely to be like something with the propolis ones. So if somebody's got ulcers in the mouth, or they've got sensitivity in the teeth, so if it's mouth rinse, it tends to be more those types of things. I'm always slightly wary of some of the really more powerful mouth rinses.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and do you have thoughts on xylitol? See a lot about xylitol. Is it good or bad?
Okay. Increases saliva flow. So anything that increases saliva flow is always great, and more great, especially with people who've got troubles with saliva flow, because it's vital. With a dry mouth, you're much more likely to get decay, periodontal issues, abrasions in your mouth, burning mouth syndromes, things that just aren't nice. So saliva is vastly important. Xylitol looks as though it seems to stop bacteria attaching to the teeth, and it seems to be quite favourable rather than unfavourable to the oral microbiome.
Okay.
So I'm a big fan of it.
That's good to know. Yeah, because you see a lot of, chewing gum. There's some xylitol chewing gum ones. Okay. So what about then foods or drinks to avoid? Like, how do you see sort of common themes where there's damage? Yeah. You know, what should we be looking at?
Definitely. So sugar's the main one, and everybody focuses on sugar, which we need to. And the thing about sugar is it's often hidden. So you think something's not got sugar. And I regularly get people to do diet diets, and the patient's like, what? I was like, we write everything down. You eat and drink for 7 days and then send it to me. And they're like, really? I was like, yeah. And then you'll go thing and thought, you'll say, well, I know that doesn't look as it, but there's a lot of sugar in that. So it's working out from a diet diary where the hidden sugars are. But also carbs and refined carbs, people often just think, oh, it's just sugar. It's not, because carbs can become sugar in your mouth, especially if you've got something which is sticky and it's in between your teeth and you're not flossing. It's staying in between your teeth, and then it just becomes a sugar. And then the other thing which I see a lot of damage for is acid. We've got to be very, very careful with acid erosion. Really careful with that. And then the foods to add, you know, anything that will give you the nutrients you need. We all know about calcium, but it's not as simple as just the building blocks of calcium. It's how your vitamin K's work, your vitamin D's work, your phosphoruses, because they all help get the calcium into the right place, and maybe making the hydroxyapatite type thing. But then you've got vitamin A for your saliva. We all know about vitamin C, the whole scurvy thing, you know, being called the Limeys, and that was a very extreme side, but we know that's good for the gums. So it's just making sure the phosphoruses, it's just making sure we've got that balanced diet. And it's hard to, because it's very hard to make sure we get all those balanced nutrients and minerals from food. Mm. It's not as easy as people think it would be.
It's not actually, and for people listening, a good thing that you can do actually is not so much homeopathy, but tissue salts. My husband, that was a test to this, he actually had a small cavity, was told he needed a filling. And I said, oh, just before you go, this is not with you, this is with another dentist years ago, and I said, before you go and have the filling, just humour me and take Calc Floss and Calc Floor tissue salts daily for like a month or two. And he went back and they couldn't find the cavity.
If you've got decay in the outside of the tooth, so you've got different structures of the tooth, you've got the enamel, you've got the dentin, and then you've got the pulp complex, which is your blood supply into the center of the tooth. If you've got decay in the outside of the tooth, then it can remineralize in the very outside of the enamel. Maybe. Once it gets to the dentin, no, it's unfortunately it's a physical hole. But once it's in that outside, you can get remineralization. And I think a lot of these types of toothpaste, we're seeing loads now, aren't we? You go through Tesco, you can see remineralizing. It's all looking at the enamel. So sometimes I'll say to a patient, you've got specks of enamel decay. I sit them down next to me with the x-rays, and like I probably did with you showing your x-rays, I do it with a lot of people. I say, look, can you see these little specks of decay? Once this goes to the next layer of the tooth, there's absolutely nothing we can do about it apart from a filling. But at the moment, you've got your chance. I want to take x-rays again, and I want to make sure your diet's perfect. I want to make sure there's no way this is going to progress. And it's about giving that patient that sometimes you have to have those conversations with people where it's like, if we let this carry on, you're going to need 7 fillings. And it's that type of thing.
So it's a good wake-up call, and knowing that you can do stuff as well, which is always always empowering. So what about actually one thing we didn't talk about, which I have heard a lot of people say they do, is like mouth taping, you know, because of how important it is not to mouth breathe.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on sort of that side?
Absolutely. You see, one of the big things, and this is another massive interest of mine, when we're breathing, we're meant to be breathing through our nose. So the advantage of breathing through your nose is your nose is a perfect filter. So it filters and moistures out anything. So if you think about all the irritants, anything we're breathing in, if your mouth breathing, it's breathing in all into your mouth, you're not getting the nasal sort of filter. But almost as important as that is something called nitric oxide. So when you breathe in through your nose, nitric oxide is released and it goes into your airflow. And as that goes into your lungs, it's a vasodilator, so it opens up the arteries in your lungs. So you end up getting more oxygen into your blood. We think the NO is one of these things. It's one of these great things that the body releases, and to help the rest of the body, it reduces blood pressure. We think it's antibacterial, antiviral, even antiplatelet. So it can, if you've got sort of any sort of problems where you could be worried about clotting. So it's one of nature's little treats back to us. So the more you're breathing through the nose, the more nitric oxide you're going to get. So there's loads of reasons why people, it can be habit to breathe through your mouth, it can be a deviated septum, it can be allergies, but if all that's ruled out, it's just about getting patients to breathe through the nose much more. And I'll say to a patient, I say, no, you're not really expecting this from a dentist, but if you can spend a good part of different parts of your day when you're on your own, you're sitting and you can focus to just literally breathe through your nose, but keep your mouth shut. The patient's like, what do you mean? I was like, I promise you, you're going to feel better. And then that's where the mouth tape thing comes in. And I tend to refer to people for that, but I do tell people to do it, patients as well. And it's putting that tape over your mouth while you're sleeping. And if you wake up and the tape's open, it's not still there, or it's waking you up, you probably are breathing much more through your tape. So it's not just to try and increase the air through your nose. It's also a bit of a test. You know, are you mouth breathing or are you not? So we're meant to be breathing through our nose, and there's a lot of benefits for breathing through our nose, a lot of benefits. So now I'm all for it, even though I know a lot of people think it's crazy.
What can you do? Like, is there anything you can do if you're mouth breathing? Should you be going, getting things checked out, or seeing what the root cause is?
Yeah, so one of the first things I do is ENT. So let's have a look. Is there anything, allergies? Is there any blockages or deviated septum? Is there a reason? If not, then it's almost like a habit. So it's using mouth tapes, concentrate on your breathing more. And the more you can physically breathe through your nose, the better it will be, the more healthy it will be for you.
Mm. I was mouth breathing for a while because I couldn't breathe out of one side of my nose because we had mold in the house. So we had the whole house was treated, did a mold detox. And then I was like, oh, I can breathe again. Like it was, so there is always generally some kind of, you know, deeper reason, I guess, even if it is habit.
That's it. Yeah. It's if we can get rid of the reasons first. So that's why things like an ENT referral from a dentist is often a good thing, just to work out why. And then the other thing about if you're not breathing through your nose and breathing through your mouth is the fact you do end up with a dry mouth. So then we go back into that circle, what we were talking about earlier, in the fact that you've got your dry mouth, more likely to have decay, more likely to get burning mouth syndrome, more likely to get periodontal issues, it's uncomfortable. So the advantage of nose breathing is huge, it's massive.
Mm. Okay, what about root canals? I've had a lot of questions come in. I have to say, have you ever watched the Root Cause documentary? Yeah, and I think it was controversial. I remember like seeing the Dental Association talking about it, and I think it's really hard to watch now, but I watched it and I was like, my God, whether this is true or not, thank God I don't have any root canals, you know, because I mean, this, people that haven't seen it, basically this guy in this documentary, he had a lot of health issues. He went to see everyone you could possibly think of. It's quite funny. He said he even did like shamanic, you know, fire walking, like literally everything to try and resolve his health issues. And it was only when he was put on a bioresonance scan, they picked up he had a root canal. And when he had his root canal taken, he had returned to health, and he did a documentary about some of the potential health issues, you know, whether it is controversial. But yeah, do you have any thoughts on it? Or for people even that may have made their mind up, they don't want their root canal, what they can do to get them removed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing, really. It's what can you do instead? I mean, one of the trials that they did, it was like, all people with all these root canals have got all these horrible illnesses. But what they didn't do is put control in there for the fact that people with no root canals had similar sort of illnesses. So the science behind it wasn't very good. You can look at a person individually on their own, but if you're looking from that, again, that pure scientific point of view, the trial wasn't very good. It didn't have a control. So you didn't have that control where they didn't have root canals, but ended up with the same sort of horrible diseases. I'm split with root canals. My front one's a root canal. The only thing is, it's what do you do? And patients come to me all the time, say, I want all my root filled teeth out. And I go, okay, that's fine. You know, you've got six. What do you want to replace them with? Oh, I'll have a bridge. We can't. It's too big a gap. We can't have a bridge. As implants, don't want an implant. So then there's a denture, so we can make you. I'm not having a denture. So if we lived in this ideal world where we could extract the teeth and then inject a new tooth, then if a tooth dies for whatever reason, then that would be brilliant, wouldn't it? Because we wouldn't have the concerns of the thing about the root canal is, you know, we talked about the structures of the tooth, the enamel, the dentin, and then the blood supply in the center. When the tooth dies, that blood supply dies. So in effect, your immune system can't get into the canal, into the tooth, because your blood supply goes into the roots and into the tooth, and that's what supplies your immune system. So once that's dead, in effect, your immune system can't get into the tooth. So the inside structure of the tooth is completely dead. So I also have patients come into me and they'll go, oh, Dan, I didn't want a root canal, so I've just left it. I was like, well, that's kind of the worst thing you can do. The dangers or the worry, the concerns of the root filling is, say you can only root fill 95, 96, 97% of the root canal system. You've got a proportion of it, but you can't fill it. So therefore, bacteria can be there and your immune system can't get to it. So they've tried ozone and all sorts of things in the past. It hasn't really, really worked. So that's one of the things seen in endodontists, because they're more likely to cover the whole root canal than a normal dentist like me. That's an important thing. But when you leave it completely, you've got 100% of that tooth, which is completely flourishing with bacteria, and you can't do anything about it. So leaving it is absolutely the worst thing. So your options are extraction, or re-root fill with it, or do a root filling with a specialist. Want somebody who will cover works with a microscope and will cover virtually all of the root canal system. Other than that, it's extraction and implants. And I think that's what I always say to patients, but it's not, because it's not an ideal world where we can just replace a tooth. In an ideal world, if a tooth died, you would just take the tooth out and put another tooth in. But when it's involved in people that want implants and won't have a denture, unless we've got that injection of a normal tooth where a tooth just re-erupts, it's looking at it from that practical aspect.
What downside of an implant, apart from that it mustn't be a very nice procedure, and
it's, do you know, not that much. Some people say they don't want the metals, but we do. I work with a brilliant oral surgeon, and he'll do ceramic ones as well. So people go, I don't want a metal, or you can do ceramic implants. There's no massive disadvantage, but they are very costly. They're costly to do. There's no way of doing it easy or cheap. You know, it's not an easy thing to do, and it's quite a costly thing. So the cost can be a huge implication. And that's one thing I say to patients, one in particular, I remember quite well, saying, if you're going to be doing all this, referring to another dentist, it's going to be a massive hefty bill or a denture. And it was like, we don't live in the ideal world, and that's the unfortunate side of it.
Yeah, you have to weigh
everything. But proof, there's no evidence. We don't know. But again, we've done a lot more evidence on root fillings than we have to do with any mercury or amalgams or things like that. And with a control, we've got no evidence at the moment. But I do understand that we can't always fill the whole canal.
Does it hurt to have an implant?
No. I mean, patients come back and say, oh, darling, it was just like a filling from you. I was like, is that good or bad? But yeah, no, it's not at all. It's not a difficult procedure in that way. So you take the tooth out, you do an implant, usually you leave 3 months, and then you can put the crown on the top. So no, they're so routinely done now in dentistry. And the dentist I refer to is brilliant. He's just great. And he's very funny. He's got a brilliant sense of humour. And he just does it and patients don't realise. You know, it's easy.
That's good to know, at least. Okay, so what are the most common issues that you see then, and how can you avoid them?
Part of my job is I see so many issues, so many different things, and it's nice to sort of learn so much about patients. But we do have the decay issues, we do have the periodontal issues, which I'm very, very, very hot on at the moment. Anybody with anything to do with periodontal issues is referred to a periodontist or somebody who's got a special interest in periodontics. So I see a lot of that. Working in central London, I see quite a lot of stress-related problems. So bruxism, grinding, chattering teeth from stress. So that's where we're working with using soft splints. And that's where I'll use hypnotherapists. This is the holistic side of me. Hypnotherapists, acupuncturists, all sorts of people just to, and I quite often have frank conversations with patients and say, look, you know, what are your stress levels? Astronomical, Dan. Work all hours of the day. I have all sorts of problems because I work all hours of the day, not just at work, but at home. My stress is almost unbearable. It's like, well, I can see it in your mouth. You know, I can see an imprint of your teeth on your inside of your cheeks, on your tongue. Your temporomandibular joint, which is a joint by your ears, what opens your teeth. You can barely open your teeth properly. You've got a limited opening. You know, have you got any headaches? Yes, Dan, I have headaches all day. What's your sleep like? I wake up all the time. I don't know why I'm waking up. It's like, because you're grinding. And then it's treating them from the stress level point of view. So it's your conventional dentistry, but also looking at the patient's stress level. You've learned about that patient. You've learned, you know, their lifestyle, you know what they're going through in their life. So it's them working on the stress levels and then doing some temporomandibular joint treatments. I'm seeing a lot of that, but maybe because it's central London and people have got a lot of different types of high powered jobs, which can be quite involving.
Actually, yeah, I've got a tendency to grind my teeth at night when I'm stressed. Like, it doesn't take even much stress, but I will grind my teeth. It's not good.
Didn't we see bits of that? I think we might have seen bits that when we did the exam.
Yeah, you did. And actually, I woke up, I had a sort of pretty stressful day the other week, and I was woke up in the night, I was really like grinding my teeth. I'm like, oh, this isn't good, because you just feel like, you know, it doesn't, I need to work on my own stress levels.
It causes so many problems. It's, you know, headache. I mean, sometimes, you know, people have got, they've been investigated from all different types of things because they've got headaches. And sometimes it can be a simple thing. I mean, obviously, it can also be all these horrible things too. But sometimes we shouldn't overlook the simple, you know, the grinding of the teeth. You know, things like that can still cause headaches, which can be very intense.
But people often don't want the simple solution because it normally involves like
changing something in the lifestyle.
Changing your job, going outside more, having more sunlight, eating better food. People want the magic pill that's going to...
Yeah. I want to take this one pill that will solve my problem and I can carry on doing what I want to do.
Yeah, that doesn't work like that. So, okay, what about, you know, it's a great chat. We've covered so much. Where do you see, we've talked a little bit about it, but the future of dentistry, you know, and holistic dentistry, where do you see things going?
Mine would definitely be the oral microbiome. If we can start testing patients regularly, look at their oral microbiome, work out how with toothpaste or mouth rinses or whatever we're going to do for treatment, we can get people's oral microbiome to as best as it can be. Making sure we're effectively cleaning things like P. gingivalis and a lot of the bacteria, which is more vicious, and making sure, you know, we're not sort of this bacteria from the mouth isn't spilling over and going onto a superhighway and going to everywhere else in your body. We're already doing it in dentistry now, very much looking at periodontal and how it links with the rest. But, you know, somebody comes in, a patient will come in, with they'll have rheumatoid arthritis, and I'll say, look, you know, we've got to be really careful here because your gums and your periodontal issue, they're not stable, they're completely out of control. That will affect you there. And I think it's the more research we do about the bacteria and how it can, like with the dementia, and how it can affect the rest of the body, it's treating the rest of the body from the mouth and getting the doctors and the dentists and all the specialists together and looking at the how the oral microbiome will link in with the gut as well, because all the gut microbiome. So I think that would be a brilliant future. It'd be a great future to really study what's going on in the mouth and not disinfecting, trying to keep everything natural, more nourishing, looking at how we can get everything back to the way the body wanted it to be more naturally.
Oh, yeah. That's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah, more hopefully. More podcasts like this will help.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think there'll be so many people having more questions and wanting to reach out. How do people get in touch with you or get more information? What's the best way?
So we keep a really friendly type thing with the fact we have a WhatsApp, which is pretty much 7 days a week. It's my wife. So we'll book in as a patient. She might be traveling from such and such a place and they're wanting this done or they want an exam, and then we'll try and fit around the patient, and then we book the patients in, and then we do it through that. So they're welcome to through the website. It's info@thebespokedentist.co.uk, email, WhatsApp, any of the they tend to be better actually, because you can get back to us whenever you need to. If you've got a WhatsApp message and you're doing something else rather than a phone call, it's actually sometimes just easier with a WhatsApp. So yeah, patients are welcome to book in that way, and we're not scared of offering people bigger appointments. If I offer somebody an hour appointment and they come in and just think, do you know what, the treatment isn't necessarily needed for you, or you don't need it, or it might not be right for you, it's never an issue. I never say, well, you've taken an hour of my time, this is the price. It's not, I'm not like that at all, as I think you've gathered. It's very much, you know, if we booked an hour and a half and we don't need an hour and a half, then that's fine, we'll go and get a coffee.
Oh, that's brilliant. And I am so grateful. Like, it was Ren Lloyd, the homeopath, who did my intro to homeopathic detox course. We covered mercury and amalgams on it, and she recommended you, and I'm so grateful.
Oh, did you? Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you. I'm so happy I now don't have those fillings anymore, and it's been years of wanting to get them out. So yeah.
Oh, we know you were a pleasure to treat. You were a real pleasure to treat. You were a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on.
No, not at all. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's been great to chat. Thank you.